AI is now no longer something you could depend on as a utility. You know, if your electricity, anytime that the electricity, the utility company says, "Oh, today, Jens, you will not have electricity,"
No,
you will be very unhappy,
yeah.
right? You will probably switch to a different company.
Welcome to Big Bang Tech Report. I'm Jens de Boer. With me, co-host Alvin Graylen.
Hey, Jens, good to see you.
Good to see you. AI is accelerating again. Today's question is very simple. Who controls the next wave? Three themes. AI becomes the operating system. AI access becomes geopolitical power. And last one, sovereignty needs scale. Alvin, let's get into it. Are you ready?
Nice to talk about.
Yeah,
okay. Let's do it.
So, I love the brand. I love Apple, and Apple was called late to AI. Maybe that missed the point. Apple plays the distribution game, and AI moves onto the device, into Siri, and into everyday's life. So what do you think? My main question is, Apple really late, or are we underestimating Apple's ecosystem?
it's an excellent question, and I think a lot of people gets this wrong. You see a lot of people saying, hey, look, Apple hasn't built their own AI. You know, Siri's been really crappy. They're so behind. And I don't know if this was a strategy or it was luck, but I think that by not spending the hundreds of billions of dollars that all of the other companies have done, they've actually put themselves in a very good position to take advantage of what's coming with AI, particularly with AI at the edge. And I think the edge-based AI, AI where it's running on your laptop, on your phone, on your glasses, I think that's where the majority of the future of AI will reside for the consumer base. Given that the last 10 years, Apple has done an amazing job on one very important thing, which is Apple Silicon. They've built their own phone chips. They built their own laptop chips. And by doing so, they've optimized it for AI. So even though they didn't create the models, now all the models are actually now running on these devices and can be made smaller and smaller and be more capable. And it does one very important thing that the other AI models online doesn't do, is that it actually allows you to protect your privacy. It allows you to be secure in knowing that I'm going to give all my information to this AI, but it doesn't mean that I'm giving up my privacy. And I think that's going to be very, very important for every consumer out there. So I don't think they are late. In fact, I think that now they have an extra few hundred billion dollars of cash that they can use later to buy up all of those AI companies that go bankrupt because they overspent.
That's your bet, more or less, huh?
Yes. Well, it's not my bet, but I think it is something that that they either lucked into or maybe they strategized. I don't think it was a deliberate strategy. So
that's more or less the Apple moment. You see the Apple moment. When will it be?
I think as we talked about at our last session, I think within the next 6 to 12 months, there's going to be a major correction in the AI valuations. And the models are getting already very good. I think they're already more than enough for most consumer usage most of the time. So it's not really about building this super AI that everybody's talking about. You know, maybe for some businesses or some governments, they still need higher performance. But, you know, if you want to have a super assistant that helps you become more efficient during the day, that helps you understand materials, that teaches you, that makes your calendar, buys your next travel plans, the AI we have today, or the AI we have last 6 months ago, was already good enough to do all of that.
Mm-hmm. A few hours ago, I was on an event, and a lot of people were asking me, "Oh, Jens, what's going on with Anthropic? They shocked Europe. And what do you think? They were restricted politically and not for technical reasons. And what's going on there? Is it the first time that we see that the government is using it as a weapon?" First,
I
maybe
think
you can
it's not
explain
about.
what's going on for all the people who hasn't realized what has happened in the last during the last days.
Yeah, so about 2 weeks ago, the U.S. government essentially gave a one-day warning for Anthropic to shut off its Fable model. So about 2 months ago, it came out with something called Mythos, which was their next generation 10 trillion parameter model, which was supposed to be the state of the art. And it was very powerful. And it was so good that they had to keep it away from non-ally governments. And so only maybe about 50 companies around the world had access to it. And then about, the early part of June, maybe June 7th or 8th or something, they took a kind of a lesser version of that and made it available. And that was called Fable. 3 days after that, the government said, you need to shut it down for everyone. Because there were some tests that came out that showed that this new model, even though it was a reduced function model and had a lot of safeguards, it was still able to be jailbroken. And jailbroken means that somebody can essentially get past some of these safeguards by using various techniques. Mm-hmm. And it spooked some of the government officials in America, who then told Fable, okay, because this is so powerful and because it can be jailbroken, we don't want it to be in the hands of bad actors or also maybe governments that we are afraid of, like China. And so they essentially made them shut it down. And when they shut it down, they didn't give any warning to their customers. So a lot of people were very annoyed and some angered by it because they might have been in the middle of a job and then it just stopped. And the thing is less about this specific case. It's really more about what that signals, is that it signals that AI is now no longer something you could depend on as a utility. If your electricity, anytime that the electricity, the utility company says, oh, today, Jens, you will not have electricity.
No.
You will be very unhappy, right? You will probably switch to a different company. And this is essentially what the message was with that type of inaction, is that it told the entire world that American leading edge AI is undependable. You need to find an alternative source. And it very quickly made open source AI much more amenable to everyone. In fact, 1 day later, the Chinese AI lab at Zipu or Z.AI, they released their GLM 5.2, which tested very similar to Fable capabilities, but it was completely open source, open weights and open license. And so when that happened, and their message to when they released it was to say, here is a model that you don't have to be worried about being turned off. You can be sovereign. And it a lot of people liked it, and a lot of people started testing it, and they start to realize, hey, open source is actually good enough. In fact, in some cases, in certain areas, it may actually have tested better than Fable and Opus. And that, if you look over the last 2 months or so, the open source portion of the open router traffic, a year ago, it was probably about 2 or 3%. Mm-hmm. Now it's around 60%. It went from 2% to 60% of total traffic is now going to open source models, mostly Chinese open source models. And I think that changes this this whole idea of, does open source make sense? Remember when I was in Germany a few weeks ago and we were talking to some of the government folks in Germany, and they were saying, oh, we're worried about using open source and Chinese open source. I'm not sure. So the funny thing is I actually got a message from Thomas, who is one of the ministers there afterwards, after this canceling. And he said, oh, Alvin, maybe I think you were right.
Really? Yeah. He sent you a message?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes, he did.
what does it mean for the next years if the open system is winning? So, and what does it mean for Europe or for Germany?
I actually think it means that now you can have leading, near frontier level AI without spending the hundreds of billions of dollars that the US and China are doing. And I think it is good for the world. It is essentially making AI a public good. It's making AI accessible.
So AI is becoming a commodity more or less, and everybody is spending, the US and the Chinese people, they are spending a lot of money for it. And then
they're actually spending less money. They're spending less. Yeah. So just this week, Coinbase, they're one of the big crypto companies.
Yeah.
They came out with an announcement. They said they've reduced, by switching most of their traffic to Chinese open source models, they've been able to cut their costs for inference by 80%.
Oh.
But they have not changed the performance of anything that they are doing. They've actually maintained the capability, but cut their costs by 80%. And there's now almost, I think Siemens actually recently announced that now they're not using open source models. And Microsoft announced that they're now going to be hosting DeepSeek. So the idea of open source is now no longer something to be afraid of. It's now something that people are starting to embrace.
Okay. So do you know, talking from Germany, do you know Tim Höttges? You have ever heard of him?
I have not.
No, he's the CEO of Deutsche Telekom, of German Telekom. And I think in the US, you know him from T-Mobile, which is one of the biggest.
So my daughter works for T-Mobile, actually.
Oh, yeah. So he's more or less the boss of your daughter. And recently, yeah, it's true. And recently, he told us, scale eats sovereignty for breakfast. Customers do not buy ideals, and they buy performance, availability, and the price. And procurement checks cost first. So without competitive prices, sovereignty losses, that is why scale matters. Do you agree with that?
I think he's absolutely right. And it's actually even getting worse now for American AI, because last week when OpenAI came out with their 5.6 model, the government said this model also is too powerful. It can only be authorized to companies that we authorize. So they have to give a list to the government to say who can see this, who can use this model. And when you start having this lack of control and sovereignty, and it costs 10 times or maybe sometimes 30 times more than the open source models, it really makes what the T-Mobile CEO said makes a lot of sense. It's now you can use as much AI as you want for almost nothing, and you get full control. Why would you give that up?
No, because he's telling us this because we are building up big factories, factories for tokens and all this stuff in Germany. And then we say to our customers, please buy our products, our tokens, because it's made in Germany. And then we are more secure or more, And
This is where we started in the beginning about Apple. I think more and more of the tokens will be actually on premise, right? So
on what?
On premise means that it will be running on a server in your office or in your home. And when that's the case, I think the big data centers become less and less important. In fact, yesterday I was sitting at dinner with one of the CTOs from a major bank in America. And he was telling me that they're moving so much of their traffic to on-premise models because they both for regulatory issues, because they're doing with people's private data, but also because they want to be able to tune and optimize these models, and they're saying smaller models actually do the job for most of what they need, and only a small portion of the work they need to use the big models. And I think this is also the finding that I had from my Stanford paper back in April as well. And it's going to become increasing, the proportion that would be reliant on proprietary models will become smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm. So let's switch from Europe to China. We have been in America with Apple, then we went to Europe, and now we are going to China, like always, more or less. GLM 5.2 is powerful, affordable, open weight, and the strategy is clear that America tightens model accesses, and this is the opposite. China opens models globally. And my main question is GLM 5.2 China's next DeepSeek moment?
I think for a lot of people, it really is, because over the last 2 to 3 weeks since it's been out, essentially everybody's been testing it, and the results are, this is not a fake model. This is not something they just maximize the benchmark test. Because for a lot of models, they actually do. They say, what did the test look like? I'll just make the test really look good. The benchmark looks good. But in real world, it doesn't work. And what they've seemed to have done is to create a model that actually works in real world and are able to, in a lot of cases, replace Opus 4.8 or 4.7. And that's essentially, you're at the most, it's not necessarily as good as Fable or Mythos, but it's definitely as good as Opus, which is the best available to everyone model, right? And because Anthropic kept the highest model away from most people, now essentially you can say the Chinese models are at the state of the art for, you know, versus the proprietary models. Yeah. And in fact, here's another thing that's interesting is a few days after the Anthropic ban, Japan, there's a lab there called Sakana. They announced and released a model called Sakana Fugu. And this model is also an open source model. And they show that the performance is almost as good as Opus as well. So now it's not just China. Now Japan also has a model that is performing as good, but is also something that is not controlled by the American government. So they say, hey, you can also rely on us. And what they do is to make a orchestration model, a model that selects models. And underneath of it, they may have 50 or 100 smaller models. But together, it's actually cheaper and it's as intelligent as a giant model. And I think, you know, this is the kind of trend that's happening. So it's, the good news is it means that it's not only China that are now making competitive models. Now we have, you know, Japan making competitive models, and, you know, Mistral is a little behind. You know, the European side is still a little behind, but I think at some point they will probably also release
<always.
laughs> a higher quality model as well. So yeah. So this is it's good news for the world that now there's more options.
And there is another good news from the world. This is ByteDance. Is it ByteDance? How do you call it?
The company ByteDance
pushes C-Dance
forward. ByteDance is the company that owns TikTok.
This is mother of TikTok.
Yes.
All over the world except America, right? More or less.
You're saying TikTok? TikTok or ByteDance?
No, TikTok is still American or in America?
No, well, no. Well, I think TikTok, they had to sell the American portion. To the Americans. So it was Trump forced them.
Not to sell. But ByteDance is very powerful in media. They are doing videos right now. And this means that production use gets closer. This matters for media, for advertising, for education, and for corporate content. My question is, is AI video now for production ready?
Yeah, I think they went from, it used to be 10 or 15 second type clips, and now they're going to 30 seconds. So essentially you can put in a prompt and have a scene of 30 seconds fully described in with one prompt without any other tools. And, if you look at most advertising, I mean, there are 30 seconds. If you look at most movie scenes, they switch angles and cameras quickly. So it's very seldom that you actually even have one scene that is 30 seconds. So, I think this tool, C-Dance 2.0 was already the best video generation model in the world. And now I think C-Dance 2.5 takes it to another level. And so, you know, for movie makers, actually, I was just in LA a week and a half ago, and a lot of movie people were there I was talking to, and they're saying all the studios are putting it into their production workflow of using AI-generated videos and AI-generated actors. And in enhancing with AI. So it used to be, you know, CGI for doing special effects. Now AI is becoming a normal part of the workflow.
Yeah. So I think we have discussed this several times, and it's more or less your favorite theme or your favorite work. It's about post-labor. And AI and robots.
Oh, actually, before we get to post labor, I do want to mention. There's a new model that came out just yesterday from Meituan. Meituan is a Chinese food delivery company. It's like Uber Eats.
Yeah,
and they came out with a 1.6 trillion parameter model that is now essentially testing to be state of the art. So what? And the most important thing is that it was completely trained on 50,000 Huawei chips.
Yeah.
So it used to be, you know, we before we keep talking about how important NVIDIA is in model training.
Yeah.
And now if they can show that they don't need NVIDIA to do training, this really changes the kind of the control that the American ecosystem now has over the global AI industry.
Hmm. So what does it mean for NVIDIA? If the Chinese, is it already more powerful, this chip, or where are they right now?
No, I think the Huawei chips are behind. They're probably two generations behind. But the fact that they didn't need to use the latest NVIDIA chips to training, because training is the most advantageous part of what the NVIDIA ecosystem provides before. Because a lot of inference, you can do inference on TPUs, you can do inference on Cerebras, you can do inference on Huawei chips, but very few people could actually do training before on anything except for NVIDIA. And now that this company has done it, and to do it with a very sizable model, it proves the capability of the Huawei ecosystem.
But you see, and we see that everywhere the models are improving, that now we see videos, we see robots and all the stuff, and people are fearing the situation. And what about their jobs? What about the labor? And because work gives status, work gives purpose, work gives belonging. And it's for not especially for us men, but for everybody or for a lot of people, it's more, it's everything. So how do you see it? Do we overtalk job losses or undertalk meaning, dignity, participation? And how do you see that?
Yeah, I think this is a very important question. And unfortunately, this is something that there's a lot of essentially denial out there, because it feels good to say, AI will never replace us in these jobs because we're just so smart and so creative and so whatever.
Yeah.
And when you do this, it means that we're not doing any preparations for when those type of job loss or displacement comes. And I think, because you use this stuff all the time, and I think the people who use it daily, they understand it. And it's the people who aren't using it, who actually need to be using it, who hide from it because they see in the news, we've always had more jobs, they'll be fine. And I think it's a disservice for the media to be telling everybody that, don't worry, these things are not that good. Because it makes people feel good right now, but it makes them very unprepared for when the problem hits us. And I think it's also very important for the governments to really start seeing this and making the right preparations. So I think you saw it. I sent you a paper last week I released, which specifically talks about this issue and gives some guidance of what we need to be doing about it. And, both from the perspective of changing our mindset, that we need to move from essentially, just pure analytical cognitive work to more service-based work, because service-based work is something that machines will probably not be able to replace for a very, very long time in terms of human-to-human type relationship work. So like elderly care or nursing or teaching, things that you want to have somebody in front of you that gives you that security of knowing you're working with a person, right? And the good news is the pool for this type of service work is actually very high. And so there is enough jobs for people to transition from their current work to this type of work. Whereas people say, there's like new jobs like prompt engineering.
Yeah.
And the reality is, or data analysts, or data management people. There may be, maybe a few companies will have these for a while, but in time, those will also shrink, right? So really, the sector that we can move people from, we went from essentially farming to manufacturing to office work. And now, we need to start thinking, what is the next big labor pool where people can do work? Right?
We have,
and we also need, go ahead.
No, we have right now a big discussion in Germany. If you as a journalist can use AI for writing articles, and if you have to tell everybody, this is not my article, this is an article of AI. And so people, our journalists, have lost their job because they haven't said that it is from AI. And Yeah, so we are right now in this discussion that we say, okay, the top minds of our country, until now, they are top minds and they've written it because they were thinking about it. And now they're using machines. And to be honest, sometimes it's even better with the machine. And yes. Now they said, no, we shouldn't do it anymore. And everybody has to say if it is from AI, he has to do a waterproof, or he has to write first, this is not my... These are not my thoughts. This is there are thoughts of AI. How do you look at it?
I mean, if you're using a tool and saying the complete data, the complete writing is made by AI, then it's not your writing. It's just you know, you got an assignment from your editor and you put in the question and it came up with an article. That's not your writing. Then you shouldn't take credit for it. But if you're working in co-creation with AI, then I think it's fine to say, hey, I used AI in this process, but the key ideas and the innovations and insights came from me. I think that's fine. So, you know, but there are some particular, you know, reporting, like if somebody's reporting on an annual report, it really does, you don't need a lot of creativity. You just need to analyze the data. Yeah. And it's fine. You can just do that whole thing, an article on analyzing annual report with using AI. So it's really about the job. But if it's an opinion piece, if it's an op-ed, that probably should be something written by the human, right?
Okay. So I think this is more or less is covering the discussion we have right now in Germany. And Evan, last question, like always, what is on your mind and what are your closing remarks?
Actually, what's on my mind right now is the kind of the geopolitical tension. I just spent 3-4 days in Montana, where a lot of Washington, D.C. government people were and think tank people were all together. And when I was there a year ago, I felt like people had hope that, hey, there's more room for cooperation. And this year, it really worried me because the feedback that I heard from these Washington people were saying, look, you know, Europe used to be our allies. Now they hate us. You know, now China's getting so strong. Now they're so their AI is so good and they're catching up. You know, we need to double down. We need to be, you know, we need to win. And it's making me very, very worried because I feel like everybody there, or not everybody, but a large portion of them was so focused on what do we need to do now to win? And very few people were asking, what can we do now to work together more so that we can all win together? And given how strong and how powerful America is in both its, you know, its economic power and its military power, and it's also its soft power, having the leaders of this country not be thinking cooperatively around the world, it makes me worried. And, you know, I think, you know, given what we're doing in terms of being in sort of a mini media, and hopefully people who are listening to us have even more reach, I think it's important for us to pass the message of cooperation out to more people, and to also pass some of this out to some of the folks in DC so that they can really understand that the world is not zero sum, and we need to stop thinking about the world as zero sum, whether it's the AI race or it's the auto race or it's the energy race or, you know, whatever, manufacturing capacity, all these things. I think there's so much interdependence now in the world that, you know, the components are coming from everywhere, the materials are coming from everywhere, the software is coming from everywhere. We cannot create a world where we are fully independent and always the leading player, and that this is true for I think both, you know, regions as well as for countries, and I hope you know, when we see each other in Berlin in a couple months, that will also be an important message we can pass as well.
We should do. What is the plan of the people who see the world in a negative view? What do they think? What should they do in the next months to win the race, to do something?
Well, I think their plan is what's happening today is, you know, keep the good stuff to ourselves. You know, only our friends, our partners, our companies can make profits. You know, use this technology to maintain advantage for as much as
possible. This is America first or not?
You know, this is America first. Yes, this is the problem. And I think we need to make humanity first, not America first. That is the issue today. So
That's a good headline. humanity first and not America first. And we see it. I know you are not a soccer fan, but everybody said, okay, this is very bad that it is in America, that's in Canada and Mexico, the World Championship. And now we see a big party on screen, on television, and we see people are celebrating, and this is a world party and not a party from only one country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sports is actually one thing that connects people, right? Yeah. Because they're, you know, they want to win, but they don't want to, they still are playing by the rules.
And they have the same rules.
Yes, there's a clear set of rules, and everybody can play. They send in the same number of players, right? You can't have one team with 20 players and one team with 10, right? So I think, but you know, in economics and in geopolitics, that's not the case, right? That the rules are different for different players. The bigger countries can have more players, okay. And so it's not a fair game. And I think this is why I actually appreciate, you know, the sports kind of mentality out there, where, you know, where we can come together and enjoy something as a planet. And, you know, so even though I'm not a big soccer fan, I can totally appreciate all the fans out there and why they root for what they do. So,
Evan, this was the Big Bang Tech Report.
yes, it is. Very good. Well, another week. And please like and subscribe to us and pass this on to your friends.
Of course. And see you next time. And you see everybody out there, see us at the Big Bang AI Festival in September. We will be both on the stage. We will talk about the Big Bang Tech trends and report. And see you soon. And thank you very much, Alvin. Have fun in Aspen. You're right now in Aspen?
Yes, I'm at the Aspen Ideas Festival. It's a yearly gathering, and it's a privilege to be here. A lot of amazing minds. So
wonderful.
And I will see you soon in Berlin.
Okay. Bye-bye, Alvin. See you.
Bye-bye. Ciao.